Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and if math has been a subject for you that made you groan, goodness knows, that's how I used to feel about it, you just go, oh, this is something I don't have an interest in. Well, I guarantee you, you're going to have a different appreciation for numbers by the time we're finished chatting with our guest today. Rena Shesso is my guest. Her fascinating book is Math for Mystics. Rena, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Donna.
You have, obviously, a passion for numbers. And, boy, when someone really has a passion for numbers, it's so significant in life because everything is affected mathematically, and I mean everything.
That is so true. And my passion came about a little bit oddly. My background is all in art, which is not mathematical generally. The only math class I had in high school was general math, one of those ones where Farmer Brown goes to the fair with bushels of apples. And
so many pigs, okay.
Well,
yes.
The kind of math that you actually might have to use, actually. And, you know, as grown-ups, it seems like the only time we really do much math, we're out at a restaurant having a fabulous and delightful meal, and then the check comes and everyone freaks out and goes into math mode trying to figure who chips in what.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's not the happiest connotation either. And as I'm reading more mystical literature over the years, I just kept thinking, why doesn't anyone put all this math stuff, anything with numbers, all in one place for Pete's sake? And somewhere along the line, it occurred to me that might be me that did that.
Well, I'll tell you what. This is something I feel that if teachers had it for school, it would make the study of mathematics a lot more interesting, and it gives a whole different perspective regarding the numbers. But I want my listeners to know a little bit about you. You have been in a very fascinating life journey because you had a grandmother who was both an astrologer as well as an herbalist. You mentioned your artistic interests. You had a long career as an art critic for Westward, Denver's paper in the New Times Change. You have a degree in art. You have been very much involved in the study of mythology and history and archaeology and the tarot and all kinds of things. And you've ended up being a teacher, a shamanic practitioner. So you have really had a life that's brought you into exploring many different arenas, and yet you found this wonderful common denominator, mathematics, that had this wonderful flow through all of it. And I think that this book that you put together is so well done because you didn't try to become super sophisticated with it. You just said, let me show you, these are my words, let me show you what I've discovered. And it's put in a very comfortable and easy-to-read manner. And
oh,
I love
you.
Four words that you put together, post-traumatic math disorder. I love that.
Yeah, a lot of us have that, I think.
I'm one of them.
Well,
and
actually, me too.
I just, you know, it's an interesting thing. I've always had somewhat of a problem with it when I was growing up, and part of it was due to vision.
Oh, boy.
I could shift numbers all the time. Well, when that happens, and of course, nobody decided to put glasses on me until I was in the sixth grade, but when you have something like that happen, often there's a shift in the head, and it's
yes.
Like, gee, I can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that was a very big part of my space. My husband even went through that.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So here he is. He's involved in manufacturing and all kinds of things, and he does all kinds of calculations. And I look at him and think, gee whiz, for someone that didn't think you could do 50 cents worth of math, you certainly are very much involved with it. But that's when he became interested in it.
You know, I think like with most things, until we have something that personalizes it for us, it stays pretty remote, pretty baffling. It's interesting that you would mention anything like with your vision. your own problems with understanding it, because what part of what really sparked this book for me, that it was time to do this now, I had been in a fender bender accident nearly 10 years ago now that, by accident standards, this was incredibly minor. But I found after the fact that I had cognitive problems. I couldn't get from one place to another in my head. And when I started doing some research about that, the dendrites in the brain get affected. I mean, it's like shook baby syndrome, where your head gets shook up.
Mm-hmm.
Closed head injury is what they call it. But it's like the bridges are out, and you can't get where you're used to being able to get to. And as I read a little bit more about that, I found that the thing that can be accommodating there isn't so much that you put the same bridges back in the same place to get to where you always had gone in your head before, but you need to build new bridges.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
the brain does that with exercise.
The brain can absolutely do it.
Mm-hmm.
And feeling like I was pretty much backed up against a wall there, because this was driving me crazy. I'd get lost driving around. I mean, it was pathetic. As I was getting back into reading, which was difficult for a while too, I kept noticing the numbers. Well, who knows why you notice what, but I kept noticing the numbers and realized that that had always been one of the big fears in my life, that I couldn't do math. I honestly believed I couldn't do math, and I just decided it was time to face that one and take a good look at it, because, well, there's just no point carrying around one fear after another through our lives where it is back at us. So that was what provided the initial challenge for me to start studying it. But the more I played with it, the more fun I was having, and I started working on illustrations. The book's heavily illustrated because, well, it's hard to even talk about this stuff for me unless I can wave my hands around and point to things.
Well, I think that's your artistic side, too.
Probably so. Probably
yes.
So.
I mean, you look at the, and whether artists realize it or not, they're often, dependent on their style of art, there is a balance. There is a configuration that you do in your head mathematically so that you get proportions correctly.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I think most of us are counting all the time anyway, although we don't think of it in those terms. I know when I drive and the radio's on, my fingers are tapping along with the music. And rhythm is a form of counting.
Yes, it is. Music
so,
and
I mean,
math.
That's with us constantly.
Right. Music and math are wonderful companions. But you have wonderful little stories throughout your book, and one of them is about Picasso. And I just thought that was so great. What a wonderful way to introduce a young person, anybody, into being comfortable with numbers by using someone like Pablo Picasso. And whether you like his art or you don't like his art, he had an imagination that was phenomenal. Talk to us about that.
Well, and I must admit, now I don't know if this is a true story or if it's one of those things art students tell each other, because they like to tell each other stories, and none of them seem to like math. But supposedly he was having great trouble as a young student with doing math in school, and finally said he had trouble looking at the numbers and not seeing pictures. If he looked at the number 2, the shape of the letter 2 and the number 2 made him think of a swan. The shape of the number 5 made him think of, you know, like a big eyebrow sticking out over a chunky old nose, where he was seeing other things there, and they had nothing to do with quantities. They just were looking like pictures.
Now, if anybody takes a look at the number 2, and you did a sort of a stylized number 2 in your book, Math for
Mystics. Yes, I picked a font that looked very swan-like.
And it does. You look at it and you go, my goodness, who would have thought that that's a number 2? The 5, an eyebrow over a nose, it makes sense.
It does make sense.
And I can see exactly why he would have thought that.
Well, and in cartooning classes, or playing with little kids, children's picture books, a lot of times the numbers are treated that way, where they're the kind of the bones underneath a picture that gets thrown over it, taking advantage of the shape of the number. It's just, you know, the human ability, if we went back in time, our ancient ancestors dealt in pictures long before they dealt in language. so it's not surprising that we kind of revert to that.
Mm-hmm.
Besides that, you know, the book often goes back to some really early stuff, like the idea of counting on our fingers.
I was going to just bring that up. Let's
were you?
Talk
okay.
about that.
Well, you know, there tend to be five of them, so that tends to be how we think of counting on them. But if you count just the knuckles of the fingers, you can count to a dozen. If you include the thumb, the visible joints in the thumb, that would be 14, which is like half of a lunar cycle. So there's all kinds of different ways that different people play with this, and these are ways of counting on your fingers that have been used in different cultures at different times. So the hand is a lot more adaptable as a kind of little adding machine than we tend to think of when we do the, you know, here's five, here's ten.
You mention an astrologer from 773 CE, and you'll need to explain what that CE is, but there was this story about the trip, and this man was traveling with him. Share that story.
The man was traveling with him?
Yes, the astronomer-astrologer named Kanaka.
Oh, much earlier. Okay. We tend to have this idea that the ancients really didn't move around much because they didn't, you know, they couldn't drive SUVs and they didn't fly. So how would they have gotten anywhere? But the fact was people traveled all the time, just not frivolously, because you had to really want to go someplace. I'm frantically digging along in here. This was a group of people who had traveled from India to Arabia. And they brought with them someone who was skilled as an astrologer-astronomer, because back in those times they really didn't make a distinction between the two. His skills were such that the person they were visiting, the caliph, asked permission to copy into Arabic translations all of the reference works Kanaka had brought along. And these were shared and passed down and recopied, of course, by hand among Arabian astrologers, and then finally got put out as another book on astrology. Now, remember, at this point, books were hand-copied. So if you had a book, you were a wealthy person. But it got into the idea of things like zeros and going back to the basis of numbers as they'd been pioneered in India. Now, CE, just it's a variation on AD. It just means current era. The idea of numbers and astrology going together, as people became more and more aware of the heavens and wanted to be more precise in how they were able to talk about it or record things, they had to keep improving how they could calculate the numbers and express them. So that's where a lot of the numerical knowledge was coming in. How do we count? How do we express what we've counted? And the zero for a long time was pretty controversial because, well, I mean, if you were writing a six and just put a zero after it, you could cheat somebody because then it turned into 60. Maybe it's a zero, but you put a tail off the end of it and it turns into a nine and you could cheat somebody. You know, it just... one monk actually considered it to be dangerous Saracen magic.
That really got me.
I thought, I just found that absolutely hilarious. But, you know, just that feeling of anything that comes from afar is not only foreign, but highly suspect.
Well, look at the way people think about many things today. Anything that is foreign to many individuals, they'll say, oh, that has to be bad.
Yeah.
Or that's evil. Well, they put some kind of a tag on it because it is something that frightens them. They don't understand. It.
Well, and logically, how do you count nothing?
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's right.
Now, my approach, again, is not a mathematical one. So when I think of zero, my way of talking about that is just starting with something like the circle of all creation. If we're standing at a flat place and looking all around us to the horizon line, it's a circle. When we look at an artwork on the wall that's a landscape, there's just a, you know, a straight horizontal line going between the two edges of the frame. It's just a simple line. But when we're out in nature, there's a full circle around us expressing the horizon. And that idea of the circle of creation, where all things are possible, all things are welcome, all things are kind of contained there, and, you know, making it a safe place to explore. That was my way of talking about a zero in terms that I can understand, because I want this to feel like a safe exploration. I still remember brutal experiences in grade school of being the kid that was just so spaced out you couldn't figure out anything that was happening mathematically. And, just the sense of shame and how can I just sink into the floor? Because, mm-hmm. It was miserable. It wasn't anything I had much of a knack for. And the way it was being taught just somehow absolutely didn't connect. Whereas if I go out in nature and count the petals on a flower, that's not overwhelming. You know, that one has some connection for me.
Mm-hmm.
Counting the number of stars that are readily visible in the Big Dipper, that one has some connection. So it's more a question of finding ways that it actually matters now in our lives. To me, and just to, I mean, there's no algebra in this book. Nary a bit.
You give a lot of history about math, which I found interesting, because it shows how different cultures had an impact on the way it was used. Also,
mm-hmm.
It shows that people throughout time, there have always been those individuals that were very curious, like the Emperor Yu the Great, the Sage King.
Yes.
That was in 3000 BCE, as you have it here. And it came about because of a turtle.
Isn't that an amazing story?
You've got to hear it.
That is ancient folklore. Supposedly, the emperor found a magical, blessed turtle walking along the riverside who had markings on his back. And that was how he recognized, of course, that this was a really special turtle or tortoise. And he had it brought back to the palace, where it was studied by all the wise ones. And they looked at the markings on the back, and they believed it was numbers. It was different dots and different lines. But that was the basis of what grew into being the I Ching. And it's also the basis of what came to be the Bagua that's now used in Feng Shui and has been for so long, and probably has roots even into something like Sudoku, though
mm-hmm.
I don't know that for a fact. I just learned finally how to do that because it's a numbers game, and cognitively that it just seemed a little too much like, Vulcan chess or something. I couldn't follow it. But
I've got
that
a
idea
girlfriend
of,
that's addicted to it, so...
Yes,
I understand.
But that idea of squares of nine, 3x3 squares, grids, that's that ancient, and it goes back to that story, folk tale with the turtle and the empress.
Mm-hmm.
Emperor, pardon me. And so many different things seem to have grown out of that, but that arrangement of 3x3 grid with numbers has popped up other places as well. And... what we call magical squares, where you're adding all the numbers across in each row and then down in each column and then across the two diagonals, coming out to the same sum each time, is one that's shown up other places as well. Ben Franklin used to create them when he was bored. But I consider that he had a pretty mighty mind.
Well, definitely, being
yes.
the inventor that he was. Also, the Mayans were very familiar with the square. And you made a comment, the Northern Africans and the prehistoric French.
Yes, and that's based on things like cave paintings. Some of this I was able to track down in great detail. Sometimes I just would find these little breadcrumbs into yet another pile of books. Some of the cave painting stuff just it endlessly fascinates me. I just found a snippet talking about how one section of one of the great caves with many paintings in it, there's a scene with a stampede of animals being shown. If you stand at that particular spot in a cave and clap your hands, it starts to echo as if it's a stampede sound.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Isn't that wild?
It
but
is
that,
amazing.
But that's, you know, back to things like rhythm and sound.
Now, we all know about Pythagoras. I mean, this was a man that was considered the genius of his day. Really was into mathematics big time, and he got into music, he got into geometry, and much of it was done, what we'd call secretly, because mm-hmm. he was stepping outside the box.
He absolutely was in many different ways. I think everything that's really known of him now is because of writings that have survived that his students wrote. They just delved into everything. I mean, they got into mathematics, they got into music, they got into dietary principles. I believe they were some of the first people known to have admitted women into their ranks, which remained controversial. Well, heck, it still is some places.
Oh, yes?
And he just was able to apply it to everything, which Kepler, astronomer, mathematician, did generations later in terms of applying mathematics to music, music's to mathematics, astrology, and music, just overlapping these different sciences. We tend to think they're pretty separate, but why? You know,
you
they probably don't need to be.
Mm-hmm, that's true, and that's why I like your book, because
Thank
I
you.
Think you bring such a diversity regarding mathematics, and it takes it out of what might be considered the mysterious realm. It really brings it a vitality to the discussion of mathematics that I think is very good. Now, you mentioned Johann Kepler and his mother, Katharina.
Yes.
Was a very, very gifted woman. She was an herbalist, and she was accused of being a witch, and
yes.
he helped save his mother. It was in a very difficult time when people had so much fear
yes.
that they would try to destroy anybody that was bringing change in. And goodness, look at what's going on in our world today. We have it on various levels going on today. I don't know that it ever stops.
Yeah, you know, and in times of upheaval and change, it's just so easy to be stuck in the fear. And I think that was one of those times. His mother was indeed charged with witchcraft at a point when that could definitely cost you your life. Through the influence of her son, he was able to get her free, but it, I think, took some years to do. But, you know, in his own writings, the bulk of his fame now is his groundbreaking calculations on planetary motion, known as Kepler's laws.
Mm-hmm.
But in his other writings, he got into things about the number five, flowers, pentagons, golden ratio, the divine proportion, things like that that very well may have overlapped with his mother's work as an herbalist. And I think that's just so absolutely fascinating. So in one generation, you have a leap from someone who's an herbalist to someone who's working on planetary laws of motion. And I find it absolutely fabulous that this is not a contradiction.
Mm-hmm.
Did this plant awareness help him with his scientific thinking? I don't know, but it didn't prevent him from making that leap. So the idea that these things can exist side by side, I think sometimes as we start to delve into our spiritual sides, we're working so hard at being intuitive that we want to kind of throw the analytical brain away. And there's just, I'm interested in kind of bringing that back together where we get to make peace with those sides of ourselves.
Oh, I think that's very important because you need the analytical, you need the intuitive. You need, everything has its place. It's just
yes.
having a harmonic that is going to bring it all together, which, again, I think with math for mystics, you do a very good job. You mentioned Fibonacci. And this is a man that is known for the golden ratio.
Yes.
And he was quite an incredible guy.
Mm-hmm.
And just touch on that for a minute.
Well, I think he's one of those great examples of somebody who, in a time that we tend to think people were kind of stuck in the dark ages and in one place, he was well-traveled. He traveled, and his father was an importer and in business in North Africa and ran a customs house. So counting was really what they did for a living. He studied with Arabian mathematicians, but then when he traveled, he kept paying attention to how people he met wherever he went used math. How did they use numbers? And that idea of the golden ratio, I don't know that he so much invented it as noticed it and found a way to express it.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is already inherent in all around us in the natural world.
Oh, yes, like the nautilus.
The nautilus shell.
Yes.
The way the makeup of, say, the skin of something like a pineapple, you can follow Fibonacci spirals going up it. Pine cones are like that. The number of petals on a daisy. The shape of our own hands and bodies and how one joint relates to another size-wise. This is already all built into our basic equipment, but to find a way to express it and then work with it in ways that you can use it artistically or, say, in architecture is really where his moves came in terms of being able to draw with it, like I said, express it. So Fibonacci spiral, if you think of how you would roll up, if you were making sweet rolls, where you lay down a flat layer of the dough and then put the cinnamon on it and then you roll it up,
mm-hmm.
or if you're coiling clay for a pot, the clay or the dough has to rest on the previous layer because they're bound by gravity. That's what we have to work with, and that's all fair and that's all good, and you can then still make a great piece of ceramics or some delicious sweet rolls. But the Fibonacci spiral just kind of goes springing off into space. This is like a fern opening, where it's got that glorious curve that is there because it has life energy. That's not the same as us rolling up sweet rolls where they have to rest on the previous layer of dough. It's because there's a life force in it. So to be able to express something like that mathematically is really interesting. The rolled up kind of a spiral is the Archimedes spiral, and that's a great one. We use it for everything. Rolls of toilet paper are Archimedes spirals from seen from the side. But the Fibonacci spiral is one that we can't really build. We can play with it in design terms, but it's the spiral of life energy. And
well,
I find
math,
that fascinating.
Yeah, it is. And Math for Mystics is a book. If you had someone in your family that really had a challenge with math, they know it's necessary, but maybe their imagination needs to be stimulated. Rena Shesso's book, Math for Mystics, is wonderful. And it is something that if you memorize some of the items that you have in here, it would make for great conversations when you go to a party. People will think that you're really something special because you'll know stuff that they had never even heard of. She goes into the days of the week, all types of different points and information about each number. And it's just really, really insightful. The Knight Templar, she covers some of that. So, Rena, you've done a wonderful job with this book. It's very, very interesting reading. Now, you have a website, RenaShesso.com. Rena, R-E-N-N-A, Shesso, S-H-E-S-S-O.com. And you've got all kinds of great things on that site that people can find out about, can investigate, maybe a game or two. It's just great. I appreciate you doing this.
Well, thank you so much, Donna. Thanks for the good words. The website has some more information about math. It has some worksheets to go with the different chapters in the book, too, just in case people want some other hands-on way to play with these things. And I actually work on some of this stuff with, I've got an 8-year-old nephew and a 5-year-old niece who are just terrific, but their minds are at a place where they're so curious that this is some of what we play with.
Oh, I think that's a
great goofing around with the math where it's playful.
I think that is wonderful, to give children the desire to explore, to investigate, and to play games to learn how to use the math. I don't think you could ask for anything better. Again, Rena Shesso, R-E-N-N-A-S-H-E-S-S-O, Math for Mystics. If you're like me, where math has always been a, do I really have to do it kind of thing, look, this can be fun, and it can be extremely interesting on multiple levels. Rena, thank you for being my guest.
Thank you so much, Donna.
This is Donna Thiebaud. We're taking a break. Don't you go anywhere. We're going to be back in just a moment.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Yes, telephone lines are now open. Here are the toll-free numbers you can call in if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, it's 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. And all you need to do, if you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then I'll tell you what I perceive. And this is something that I've worked with for so many years. I just am delighted to be able to share it with you on the air. So it's fun, it's interesting, I consider myself an information resource, and you have the opportunity to talk with me live on the air. So give me a call at 877-876-5227, Canadians 888-815-9756 or 530-876-3222. We're talking about mathematics in the brain, and I found it fascinating when Renna was talking about an accident that she had and how she had to learn again to a degree how to make her brain work again because she had this accident. She didn't think there'd been any injury, but she was having cognitive problems. There is a fact, and it was something I shared with a client of mine day before yesterday who had been going through certain situations with a member of family who had gone through strokes. And the reality is today, they have shown that instead of the brain deteriorating, it actually expands. It can become more and more prolific in its development of those connections in the neurons' development in the brain itself. It's absolutely amazing. And you can have someone that's gone through a stroke that's totally paralyzed, and they will totally regain the use of that side of the body that was disabled because of the stroke affecting the brain. And I had someone I was discussing this with yesterday, and they said their father, that had happened with their dad. And the physician had told the family, this is the way it is, your father's never going to walk, he's not going to do this, that, or the other. And what he did, he let the family know he was going to have total mobility. Within 1 year, he had it. Now, what it took was physical therapy, it took exercising, and it was making, he made himself do certain things. And she said his memory, everything, it really came back. And this is the amazing thing that we have discovered. The body has recuperative capabilities. And that's why with good nutrition and with exercise and with intellectual occupation of the mind and the body and the spirit, you are able, even if you've been given a setback physically, you can come back. That's true. You can. So it's very important to recognize when life hands us challenges, we have the opportunity to overcome them. We may have to do them in a different way than we would anticipate, but we are going to be able to do that. And one of the things that through my reading, I come across so many different pieces of information that I'm always amazed at how often individuals will not be aware of all of these points of information. Well, let's face it. In a day, how much are we bombarded with? And how often are we bombarded with assumptions that have been accepted because, gee, so-and-so said this? We need to remember we have to be an examiner of type. We have to question. And when people get upset with the fact that you question, you need to ask yourself why. If they get upset with your asking questions, maybe it's because they just honestly don't have an answer to your question or afraid to acknowledge that and say that to you, gee, I don't know. Or they feel threatened by it. Throughout history, just like Rena and I were talking about, when people do not understand something, they'll label it as bad. They will say, this is terrible. I had a woman I chatted with in Los Angeles, and this was just not too long ago, on one of my business trips. And we were talking about computers, and she said, I think they're the work of the devil. They are absolutely horrible. They should be just totally destroyed. And I said, excuse me, what are you talking about? Do you realize the good that it's done? And her response was, I don't even want to discuss this. The reason she had this attitude is that she didn't know how to utilize this resource. Part of her work and her career was being put aside because of technology, and she did not know how to cross the bridge to take what she had in knowledge and understanding and utilize the technology so that it would serve her. But I got news for you. To give up her cell phone? Forget it. That's her life's blood. Computers, technology. See, we often have this dichotomy, or I would even say a hypocrisy. What we're comfortable with, we say, oh, this is wonderful. What we're uncomfortable with, we say, this is terrible. I think we need to examine things. And that is why when we're afraid of something, like Rena did, she said, I'm going to go face my fear. What's the worst thing that could happen? I have to use a calculator for the rest of my life. So she started exploring. And when she started to explore, she found that she was experiencing all kinds of new information. We need to keep that in mind. We need to keep that in mind. We're never going to know everything about everything. We can't. But it's something that if we have an excitement about life and about learning new things and trying new things, and even exploring old stuff like history, different components, we are going to open up a world for ourselves that is just absolutely fun, fabulous, and insightful. And perhaps it'll enable us to realize that we do have control over what we do, what we think, to a great degree. So when you can be open to learning, it is going to open your world. Now, I came across some information, and it was written by Cynthia Dermody, and she said, we hear about these wonderful musicians. We will listen to artists that when we hear them, will just say, oh, my goodness, they play that viola as if it was just a part of them, and truly it is. And she said, when she started doing research on these truly accomplished musicians and performers, she said the real way to get to Carnegie Hall is to practice, practice, practice. Oh, ho, hum. For how many centuries has that been said to any and all of us? There's research that has been done, extensive research, that has found that those musicians, those performers that are extremely skilled, just aren't doing it spontaneously. They have been doing a lot of practice for a lot of time, and some of them would not have even been considered capable of doing what they do. The University of Arkansas music professor Elizabeth Margulis said when she did some research on trained flute players, when they listened to flute music, she said their brains lit up on an MRI scan, but they didn't react to violin music. She said, in her opinion, if music was simply a genetic disposition, their brains would have responded equally to both instruments. Now, she also did some tests with violinists. Same thing happened. Of course, you have to be motivated. You want to be coordinated. And if you have an inclination towards music and are involved with people all around you that love music, that really helps. But the research proves that those that are world-class musicians become proficient and famous not because they're prodigies, like a Mozart, but because they practice hours every day for a lot of years to be able to produce harmonious results. More than that, what they will do is they will literally immerse themselves in what they love. They will look for those examples, those people who are the epitome of what they would like to become. And there are the Mozarts that come every once in a while, but stop and think about Mozart's history. His father demanded that he play over and over and over and over again. That kid was performing when he was 5 years old at a level that, my goodness, most parents today would say, I wouldn't put my child through that. That's child abuse. In today's world, that's what it would be considered. But he had an inclination, and the father said, this is what you will do. So it is really quite fascinating when we look at people and we think that they have got something special. If they have a passion for it, they do. What really makes them special is when that passion becomes a part of their heart and their mind and their spirit. Then it is something that exudes from them, and if they take pride in what they do, they're going to want to be the best at what they do. So keep in mind, practice, practice, yes, 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 and more practice. It's an amazing thing how it benefits you. Of course, it always helps, I think, to have a good teacher, too, because that teacher will often let you know if you're off key. This is Donna Siebel. We're going to be taking a break for just a moment. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. We're taking a break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning, and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyND.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Siebel on her show on bbsradio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
Hello, this is Karen Tallcat Conley, creator of Psychic 101. Join me on Wednesday, May 14th at 6:55 PDT, Station 2. Meet Hope and Randy Mead, producers of the amazing movie, Orbs, The Veil is Lifting. Who knew a digital camera would be a tool to view conscious life forms such as fairies, ETs, angels, and more? Hope and Randy's extensive documentation proves that anyone can photograph and experience realms and dimensions formerly reserved for mystics and shamans. So have your camera ready and join us Wednesday, May 14th, 6:55 PDT for Orbs, The Veil is Lifting.
Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756 or 530-876-3222. Well, tomorrow, it looks like we're going to be having an open mic day. Dr. Petty was invited to do a talk, so he wasn't able to make his show tomorrow, but we are going to be talking with him on Memorial Day. And by the way, don't forget to go to his blog, Dr. Richard Petty, and you will find all kinds of updated medical information that he has researched and can verify as good material to read. It's quite informative, and I think you will find it interesting to see what is going on in different parts of the world regarding medical knowledge, nutritional information. All of that is there. But next week, we're going to have a wonderful lineup of people. We're going to be talking about the secret of butterfly lovers. Yes, we're starting off the week with that. Keith Richardson is going to be my guest. Teresa Tapp is going to be on Tuesday with us. She is so much fun. I just love having her as a guest because she's so involved in wellness. But more than anything else, her exercise fitness is so easy to fit into a day, and it really makes a difference. It's made a big difference with me. But more than that, it is the different points of information she gives about how the body works. So we're going to be talking with Teresa, and we'll be talking about, for those gals out there listening, if you have a problem with cellulite, you want to tune into this, because she's going to tell us how we can target and tone those sides of the thighs we called saddlebags. Ugh, yuck. Well, we'll find out about that. Also, we're going to be talking money. Yes, who's sitting on your nest egg? Robin C. Davis is going to be my guest next week. And then we're going to be talking about all kinds of secrets of aloha. Yes, we're going to be talking about some wisdom of the ancients. Garnett Aldrich is going to be my guest. And then one of my favorite beverages, tea. We'll be going to England, talking to Teresa Chung about tea bliss. Oh, we've got such a dynamic week next week. I want you to tell your friends and come on and buy and listen. And don't forget, you can always visit the archives. If you miss a show, you don't have to really miss it. You will be able to listen to the rebroadcast at any time that is easy for you and not miss any of the wonderful guests that we have here on the Donna Sebo Show. But in the interim, if you want to give me a buzz, this is a good time to do it. Phone lines are open 877-8765-227, 888-815-9756. My goodness, safety razors. Men use them, women use them, and they have become something we just take for granted. In fact, we have them in disposable manners, and we can just use it once and pitch it if we want. Well, the history of shaving is one that's not going to take a long time to share with you, but they were first introduced in 1903, and the public was so excited about them, all of 51 razors and 168 blades were purchased. Within 1 year, 90,000 razors and 12.5 4 million blades were sold. Can you imagine how nicely that stock did for that company? The first step towards safer shaving had been taken by a Frenchman in the 1700s, in fact, 1771. And in 1828, the Sheffield Company of England produced a razor with a guarded cutting edge. And then in 1895, King C. Gillette, familiar name here in the U.S., a Boston bottle cap salesman, he got this brilliant brainstorm of using wafer-thin slivers of steel that were held in a safety clamp and were so cheap that they could be thrown away instead of sharpened. Now, it took him 8 years, along with other individuals, to iron out all of those difficulties of mass production, and the shaving revolution was on, and it's still going on even today. A little bit of trivia for you regarding that wonderful apparatus that so many of us have in our bathroom cabinets and drawers, the safety shaver. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you want to chat, 877-8765-227 or 888-815-9756. Once in a while, we'll come across information about people whose lives have been changed by very dramatic circumstances. And their stories about how they're able to make their lives work better often are very meaningful. And that's the case with Carol Brody Fleet. Now, at the young age of 40, she lost the love of her life. And she knew she had to do something to turn her life around. Now, the love of her life, his name was Mike, he ended up getting Lou Gehrig's disease. And it's a progressive, unstoppable loss of muscle control. And it just was very, very hard on her to watch her husband go through this process and eventually to die. Now, she decided she was going to do some things. She decided she was going to wear makeup, put on some nice clothes, start getting dressed up, because she went through a very dark period after her husband's death. And she said, I really need something that can help me get through these moments when I really get down in the dumps. So she decided she was going to do an online newsletter. And it was for other young widows. And do you know what? Women started clicking onto her website, and her website is called widowswearstilettos.com, widowswearstilettos.com. And she started communicating with a lot of these people, and today she is answering 1,000 emails a week. She's written a book, and she said healing is a journey. She'll never stop loving her husband, but now she's found love again. She said, I've found a new life is waiting for you. It may not be the life you signed up for, but it can still be a big, beautiful life. Hats off to Carolyn Brody Fleet for not just turning around her own life, but also blessing and benefiting so many others. This is Donna Siebel. We're out of time. Enjoy this magnificent day you have and this fabulous weekend that's in front of you, and we'll be back here, same time, same place, right here at bbsradio.com. The Donna Siebel Show. Talk with you then. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.
Hi, I'm Antonia Love, psychic advocate and metaphysical teacher. Welcome to bbsradio.com. If you're looking for the higher thought, all original programming, even the music we play, always original, always here on bbsradio.com.